Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is Deanna Spingola, and welcome to Spingola and Friends. It is Tuesday, August 5th, 2014, and this radio program is not sponsored by anyone. Therefore, it is for people who really can handle the truth. Please visit my website, spingola.com. Subscribe to my email so that you may receive advance notice about the programs. I now have a supply of book 3 in both hardcover and paperback. It is the third book in the Ruling Elite series. Its title is The Ruling Elite, Death, Destruction, and Domination. I would love to have you also visit the website of a very wonderful friend who has created and maintains this site. He uploads all the audios from all the programs, and you may access those audio files at spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. If you have questions during the program, you may call 646-787-1915. We will also be taking questions and comments from the listeners via my email, comment@spingola.com, or from the chat room, spingola.chatango.com. Remember, I do not access my regular email during the program. So if you have questions or comments, email them to comment@spingola.com. My guest today is Matthias Chang, and his website is futurefastforward.com. He is the author of Brainwashed for War, Programmed to Kill, the Zionist Global War Agenda. He is also author of Future Fast Forward, the Zionist Anglo-American Empire Meltdown, and the Shadow Moneylenders and the Global Financial Tsunami. Matthias, welcome to the program. Are you there? Oh, what happened to us? Let's see. We should be hearing from Matthias here. I talked to him just for a second before we went on. Okay, there you are.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, thank you. Welcome to the program.
I'm very honored to be on your program. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I'm very honored to have you on the program. Now, you've written in the last couple of weeks, you've written some very wonderful articles about the MH17, and you sent them to me via email, and so I wanted you to talk to us and tell us what the heck is going on. One of the article that you wrote on July 21st was another false flag operation by the Zionist Anglo-American War cabal. So why don't we start with that and just tell us what's going on, what your views are, what's going on with the Malaysian government, and your views in general about, well, the world seems to be in turmoil, more so than ever before.
Thank you. I would like to raise two critical points regarding MH17. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, I can hear you.
Fine. The first point is that Malaysia has been targeted. No one can say it's a mere coincidence that in a span of 5 months, two Malaysian planes, MH370, an MH17 has crashed, allegedly, for various reasons. I would like to warn our readers, or your listeners, that there is a reason why Malaysia has been targeted. Some 7 years ago, you may recall, Dina, that I was one of the few people who helped establish the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal, as well as the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Commission. the War Crimes Commission, comprised of inter alia, the former Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations, Dennis Holliday, as well as Hans von Sponeck, Professor Michel Chosudovsky of Global Research, and other leading lawyers from America, UK, and Malaysia. And the War Crimes Tribunal, which we established, consists of retired Supreme Court judges of Malaysia, as well as leading jurists from India, America, and UK. Now, I think, unlike other countries where they have set up similar organizations to try war crimes, Malaysia and the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal is the first of its kind in that it follows stringently criminal procedures as in any court in US, UK, Australia, or Europe, meaning you have a full-fledged panel of judges, retired judges. You have a prosecution team as well as a defense team. And although the accused in the first trial, the former President Bush and Blair, were absent, a full-fledged team comprising not only Malaysian lawyers but other lawyers from overseas represented the accused and mounted a very, very rigorous defense for Bush and Blair. And after a full trial of several days, Bush and Blair were convicted of war crimes. And we were the first country, a small country, a third world country, to put up an indictment, convict the two of them, and then publicly declare that Bush and Blair were war criminals and should be treated as such throughout the world, and that should go to any other country as a visitor, Bush and Blair should be arrested by citizens pursuant to the right of citizen arrest. Following that conviction, we mounted another trial to indict Israel for war crimes and genocide against the Palestinians. Intense pressure was mounted against Malaysia and the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal to stop the prosecution of Israel, Ariel Sharon, and the others for war crimes. Nevertheless, the trial proceeded and Israel and the other leaders of Israel were convicted of war crimes. Following these two landmark historical judgments of the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal, Malaysia as a country were under immense pressure, alright, were coerced to do many things to toe the line. The current Prime Minister went so far as to visit Gaza before this present war was started and pledged undivided support for the people of Palestine, both in the West Bank and in Gaza. And you will notice that as a result of our stand, when MH370 disappeared, quote within quotes, we pointed out that a strange phenomena happened. That sometime, about 3 months before the crash of MH370, Israel bought a similar plane, a Boeing 777, bearing Malaysian Airline Systems logo, and parked in Tel Aviv. Now, how could a plane MH370 on a normal flight to Beijing disappeared out of sight and then allegedly crashed in the Indian Ocean near Australia. Huh. That location
That is amazing.
Yeah. That location was allegedly pinpointed by a British satellite company called Inmarsat. Let me sit here and now for your listeners that I was the only one in my country, and for that matter in the world, in the first week of that crash, to say categorically that a plane did not crash or could have crashed at the location pinpointed by Inmarsat and or the USA or British experts. And I issued an open challenge to so-called experts to prove me wrong. After 6 months of wild goose chase, they cannot prove to me or to the world that a plane has crashed in some ocean 1,000 kilometers west of Perth. Now what's interesting was, when the plane allegedly en route to Beijing turned back, went north to Thailand, then went west towards India, and then southwards, it passed through Thailand when at the middle time there were two war games, Cobh Tiger and Krabat Gol. And you would know, Dina, that when you have a war game, a massive war games comprising of the three principal countries, USA, Singapore, Thailand, and thereafter Indonesia, Malaysia, Japan, South Korea were invited as well. They never denied that during the time of the war games, Cobra Gold and Cobra Tiger, US AWACS planes, satellites, and all the other sophisticated instruments, radar, surveillance, whatever, was on full deploy. And yet they say they don't anything. They don't know anything about how MH370 disappeared. They keep on denying, and they then alleged it was a suicide mission by the pilot. There could be a bomb on the plane or what have you. And then they went on a propaganda warfare against Malaysia, lambasting that we were stupid, inefficient, I don't have the expertise to investigate the crash of 370. When the world went on a massive propaganda against Malaysia, I went on a website and to radio interviews, said that that plane, MH370, did not crash and was hijacked by remote control by the Boeing uninterrupted autopilot, which was installed in all Boeing planes, and which in the event of a so-called hijack, such planes can be remotely controlled from a ground station or from a plane, AWAC plane. They deny, and they continue to deny, that the plane could have been hijacked remotely. But after 5 months of wild goose chase in Australia, they now admit that the plane was hijacked remotely. Now what was strange was, and this is very significant in relation to MH17, is that although the plane was a Malaysian plane, it was hijacked within Malaysian airspace, Britain and Australia decided to hijack the investigation and compelled Malaysia to accept Australia to lead the investigation. For 6 months, they went on wild goose chase, found nothing. the world mass media did not criticize Australia for not having found anything for 6 months. Yet, within 2 weeks, a mere 2 weeks of the disappearance of MH370, while our country was mounting every effort to do everything within our power to trace the plane, to console the families whose loved ones disappeared, we were told we don't know how to conduct investigation, we'll be useless. But no criticism has been levied against Australia for having conducted a wild goose chase for 6 months and found nothing. And the joke now is that having deployed military naval assets of US, USA, Australia, Japan, China, Indonesia, and emphasize military naval assets, the most sophisticated naval ships were deployed in that part of the world. They couldn't find anything. And lo and behold, they now say they will now appoint the private sector to look for MH370.
Oh my goodness.
Now why I want to preface this bit of information to your listeners that upon the crash of MH17, in my article, I foresaw and I did point out that likewise, in MH370, the investigation of MH17, despite the fact that the plane is a Malaysian plane, the lead investigation would not be conducted by Malaysia. And lo and behold, today we are told the Netherlands and UK will lead the investigation.
Oh my God.
Allegedly, on the grounds that Netherlands had more passengers on board who died. Now, if that was the only ground to support the call for Netherlands and UK to lead the investigation, why then, in the case of MH370, where the Chinese passengers from China formed the bulk of passengers that disappeared, not Malaysians, Chinese nationals.
Sure.
But China never did claim to take over the investigation or have any right to lead the investigation and left it to Malaysia to conduct the investigation. But it was hijacked. Likewise, MH17 was hijacked. And now we lost control. And then, of course, you would notice, like 911, within an hour of 911, Bush and the entire West media, without any evidence, said it was Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. Within 1 hour of the crash of MH17, with no evidence whatsoever, the entire Western media pinpointed President Putin and Russia, as well as the resistance to the Kyiv regime, has been responsible for the crash of MH17. Now what was interesting was this. When the site was still under heavy fire by the Kyiv regime in their battle against the opposing forces, the people who went to the site saw bodies strewn all over the place in an area over few kilometers, square kilometers. It's a huge crash site. And what they did was, the opposition forces was to put those, whichever bodies that were recovered, put them in bags and load them on refrigerated coaches, train coaches, to preserve the body.
Oh my gosh.
And armed guards were deployed, okay? Now, as you know, if there's any crash, when bodies are strewn all over the place, some may have any parts, fingers, hands, legs, some are full bodies, when exposed to the air and atmosphere, it will rot very quickly. So, they were put in bags, body bags, and refrigerated to preserve the bodies. But what happened was the Western media then accused the Ukrainian resistance forces as having stolen the bodies to hide evidence of their complicity, and that there were no guards at the crash site. But, strange enough, an Australian journalist had said, how is it that some bodies are still left on the site and not in body bags as yet? Therefore, they are not looking after the bodies. And my reply was this: when bodies are strewn over a few square kilometers, it takes time to collect the bodies, put them in body bags, and store in refrigerated coaches to preserve the bodies. The bulk of the bodies were so preserved. Of course, there were some still remaining. So we can't have it both ways. When they stored the bodies in refrigerated coaches, they were accused of hijacking the bodies to hide evidence. But when some bodies were left on a site pending retrieval, the resistance forces were accused of neglecting to collect those bodies for preservation. And then when the OSCE monitor teams arrived at the site, they then said that there were armed guards at the site, but they were not prevented from entering the site. So you have on one hand some mass media saying the site was not secured, there were no armed guards, and on the other hand the SCE team was saying there were too many armed guards. They can't have it two ways. But what was the most amazing truth that came up was when the Netherlands expert team arrived at the site and found that all the bodies were properly body bagged and placed in refrigerated train coaches, he remarked that given the conditions of the site, and given the conditions there was a war zone, there was military clashes between the Kyiv Regime Army and the resistance, what the resistance forces did was remarkable. They preserved the body in a remarkable state to facilitate, right?
Yes.
Proper examination of the bodies. So can you see the mass propaganda? For 2 weeks, Russia was accused of stealing the bodies, put in train to send it back to Russia, right? That they were decomposed, whatever, etc., etc. But truth was, had the bodies not been placed in body bags and put in refrigerated containers in train coaches, the bodies would have deteriorated further. And our Malaysian government, who went to the site and to the train, found that whichever Malaysian victims that were recovered were in proper condition of preservation. So that speaks volumes about propaganda.
Indeed.
Now what was interesting was that they then said that they had evidence, the US and UK had evidence, satellite images, that it was a Buk missile that shot down the MH17 plane over Ukraine. Now if they had satellite images, just as in MH370, when there were war games going on in Thailand, north of Malaysia, why did America, Thailand, and UK showed images of how MH370 was hijacked? They refused to disclose any evidence. And they just say that, right, we can't explain how MH370 disappeared. But they are satellites. AWACS. All right?
Right.
And as you know, to the west of Malaysia is the famous military naval base called Diego Garcia.
Yes, of course.
That base, they sent planes to Vietnam during the Vietnam War. They sent stealth bombers to Afghanistan.
Yes.
During the Afghanistan War. They sent planes and B-2 bombers to Iraq during the Iraq War. So if any plane that was flying within the region, the radar and satellites that was located in Diego Garcia would have picked up easily the whereabouts and the route of MH370. But for some strange reasons, they said, we don't have nothing. Likewise, in the MH17 case, they say they have evidence it was Russia, Putin, what have you, that shot the plane down. So in a court of law, if you assert that you have evidence of a crime, and you have evidence to show who was the perpetrator of the crime, surely you would produce the evidence. None whatsoever. Hillary Clinton, on a, I think CNN or Bloomberg, I can't remember, TV interview with, I can't remember the name of the interview, I think it's Charlie Rose, I think. With no more evidence whatsoever, by a mere question by Charlie Rose to her as to her views as to what caused the crash, she can, without any reservation, without any evidence, say it was Russia, it was Putin. And thereafter, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Times of England, Daily Telegraph, Daily Mail, all the Western press just say it was Putin and Russia. Yet, Russia disclosed satellite images of the location of Buk missile systems that was placed and deployed a few days before the shooting down of MH17. But more importantly, Russian satellites showed that two Ukraine planes were tailing MH17. Ukraine planes was tailing MH17.
Wow.
And that's significant. The route of MH17 has been declared safe for transit. Right.
By
the international body of aviation. And the Ukrainian government also declared any plane flying across that region at a height of 33,000 feet will be saved. Now, Malaysia Airlines was not the only airline that was flying on that route. It's a civilian route. No military planes are allowed to fly through that corridor. Singapore Airlines on that day was a mere 90 kilometers from MH17. It may sound very far away, 90 kilometers, but in flying time, it's only a few minutes away from MH17. Thai Airways was flying on the route. KLIM was flying on that route. Alright? Air India was flying on that route. So why did they pick on the Malaysian Airlines? Why not Singapore Airlines?
Sure.
They were just a few minutes behind. Why not Thai Airlines? Why not KLIM? KLIM, the Dutch airline.
Sure.
Malaysian Airlines was targeted again. Alright? And at that particular time, U.S. had a satellite deployed from the International Space Station to monitor and to assist the Kyiv regime military forces conducting military offensive against Eastern Ukraine. They had a satellite. The Russian Ministry of Defense make a public statement that at a particular time there was a US satellite. This satellite was deployed and was designed to track launching of missiles from ground to air. Now, with that assertion by the Russian Ministry of Defense, why has not US denied that he had a satellite? At the particular time when every 17 was shot down, silence. Why did US not rebut or refute Russian data that there were two planes tailing every 17? Why would two planes, Ukrainian airplanes, Su-35 or 25, following MH-17? Unusual, uncalled for, illegal, because a military plane cannot fly in a corridor reserved for civil air traffic. None of these questions were answered. None of these questions were picked up by any mass media. And then adding insult to injury, the Ukraine regime allegedly showed a YouTube video of a conversation between supposedly a Russian commander and a Ukrainian resistance fighter, showing that in that conversation that the Ukrainian resistance fighter admitted having shot down MH17. It was a hoax. It was a fake. It was fabrication. Because when they shot the YouTube video, and as you know, if you post the YouTube video, when you load up the video, it will show the time and date in which you loaded up the YouTube video.
Right.
That date and time cannot be erased. That fake video allegedly capturing the conversation between the Russian and the Ukrainian was dated 16th of July, a day before the crash. So how can a conversation take place that they shot down a they shot down MH17 on 16th of July, when no plane bearing MH17 was flying on 16th of July. That
right.
plane flew on 17th of July.
Right. Now you
another
can,
fraud.
Absolutely. Another. Yes. Now you can change the dates, and some dates can be kind of confusing in other websites because you can dedicate a website to one objective and then rededicate it to something else, and it will give the original date of the initiation of the website. But with a YouTube video, you upload it, it shows the date stamp, and you cannot change that. So that is very interesting. I think that a lot of people put too much emphasis and too much credibility in YouTube, so it makes a very good point of propaganda for people. But this is very interesting. I'm just blown away by your information and the way that you've pieced a tribunal together that happened, you know, a few years back, and that this is a reason to target Malaysia. And I know, and you also know, that a certain cabal, the tribe, does not ever forgive or forget. And they will take revenge at the opportune time.
I agree. But you can be assured that although we are a small country, we are not a military power, we have principles.
Exactly.
Right? And we will stand by those principles. And in my writing, in my radio interview, I've always maintained we're very, very cordial relationships with the American people. Our difference is with the Obama administration, and before that, the Bush administration, not the American people.
Right. And it's
and
interesting.
We fear.
Go ahead.
And we fear, once again, that the American people will be hoodwinked and make cannon folders for another war. A useless, wasteful war. And the young people of America, bright young women and men, will be sacrificed for a war agenda, for a war party, for some geopolitical objectives.
Sure. You can see the continuity between the Bush administration and the Obama administration. They are no different. They serve one purpose and one country, and the Congress is totally behind the Israeli state.
I totally agree. Now, what's important is this. The timing of this shooting down on MS-17. Alright? Now, before I go further, I want to divert your listeners to something so absurd, so weird, that is beyond comprehension. Okay? But I want to bring this issue up now so that you can have the jigsaw puzzle in place, so that every piece is right, in itself means nothing, but when you assemble them together, will give you a better picture. And I just pause here and remind you, if you can recall, some months ago, and I put up this video in my website, the CEO of IMF, Christine Lagarde, I hope I pronounced the name correctly, gave a speech at the American National Press Club, right? And this is really, really significant. And in the opening statement of her speech, she said, I'm told to say this, right? Meaning, she was instructed to say something.
Oh.
And guess what she said?
What?
She made reference to numerology.
Really?
She asked the audience, right? You know about numerology? I'm trying to paraphrase, right?
Uh-huh.
The video is on my website. Okay, she said, are you familiar with numerology and compressed numbers? Compressed numbers? Say, for example, all right, 17.
Oh,
17,
yes.
17 is made up of 1 7. 1 and 7 makes up 17. But in numerology, all numbers must be reduced to the compressed number, single digit. So 17 is 1 plus 7 equals 8. You follow me?
Yes, yes.
Right? So when you say about compressed numbers, whatever numbers you have must be reduced and compressed to a single number. So she went on, says, well, we're going to have some bad times ahead. She gives hints. She kept saying, right, please listen carefully. And she mentioned that the G7 will be gathering. G is the seventh alphabet. All right? In the 26th alphabet. All right? G. Letter G is the seventh alphabet. And then she said, 2014, the year 2014, drop the zero. 2 times 7 equals 14. So you will notice that she was emphasizing the month of July, 7. Then she said, well, G7 may do some things. Maybe G20 may also be involved. Alright? Now what I'm trying to give you is a summary, because the speech is quite long, and I don't think it'd be right for me to go into every word of it. But what I'm going to give to you is a hint. Have you ever heard such a person of such stature, IMF, giving a speech about financial crisis and other crises using numerology?
Never.
As a guide.
I haven't.
So precisely, neither have I. Now, I don't know whether I can't remember whether I sent you an email, because it was a coincidence. I wrote an email to all my friends all over the world, but I can't remember whether I sent to you. And I said that something big will happen in July.
Right, yes.
Earlier, I said that, right? I forecasted that something would happen in April. When April passed by, I told all my friends, thank God, nothing was decided in April. Maybe later. And then I wrote another email as a result of this research. And I said that most likely a major decision has been made by the war party and the world elite. We have something happening on 20th July plus minus 2 or 3 days. And I said in my email, I'm not God, I can't give you the exact date. But I'm sure it will happen in July, about 20th of July, thereabouts, plus minus 2-3 days. If it's minus 2-3 days, it's 17th of July, am I right?
Yes.
Right? So I gave a range of dates in July. And you will recall also that prior to the shooting down of MH17, the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, the BRICS countries, had a summit in Brazil whereby they announced the alternative IMF, the alternative World Bank, so that the BRIC countries will set up the equivalent of IMF, the equivalent of World Bank, to help other countries to face the coming financial crisis, and that will be a $100 billion fund to assist countries in need to withstand the next tsunami.
Wow.
And that following the last few years, if you recall, the big BRIC countries have embarked on a program to trade with each other in their own currencies. Malaysia, again, take note, was one of the first countries to enter into bilateral agreements with China, with Russia, with Brazil, with other countries, that when we trade, when I sell goods, when Malaysia sells goods to you, you don't have to pay me US dollars. Pay me in your own currency or my currency, thereby getting out of the forex risk. As you know, world trade, over 80% is denominated in US dollars.
Right.
Especially oil, crude oil. So a country like Malaysia has to work our butts out to make ringgit in our GDP. But we have to convert our ringgit to US dollar in order to purchase crude oil and other goods. Mandatory. And because, as you know, recently, right, and they have admitted and confessed, the forex market is manipulated, the LIBOR is manipulated, the silver market, the silver fix is manipulated, the gold fix is manipulated. So there's no way any country can survive in such a market whereby a handful of big banks controlled by the war party, by the global elites, hold sway. So as a result of this, all this risk, the turmoil following the first tsunami to a many countries have decided that they have to take preemptive measures for the next global tsunami. So if we reduce our exposure to the US dollar and the forex risk and exchange risk, then we would reduce our need, we have a better control of our finances. That is taboo. United Kingdom and US will not allow it. And so they have been on a war path against any country who dare move away from the US dollar regime.
Right.
That is why you must understand, and your listeners in America must understand, that the financial elite and the war party has no interest in the American people. What they want is total global control of finances. And let me tell you, it may sound odd to you, these people, the big six banks, right, they don't give two hoots for America. They want a new world order. They want a new financial order for which they are in control. And I'm telling you and your listeners in America, they themselves want to destroy the US dollar so that they can have another currency which they can control. Because they know that the US economy, right, is so bad, it's on the downslide, and there's nothing to save the US economy. Because the Fed, by money printing, by the QEs, have destroyed the very substratum of the US economy.
Right.
Alright?
Yes.
And they have outsourced jobs to Mexico, to everywhere. There's no manufacturing in America. They just want to focus on the global derivatives casino is now valued back again to 800 trillion. They think that by controlling the derivatives market, they will control the world. But the opposite is happening. Because so much inflation has been exported to other countries as a result of QE 1, 2, and 3 by the Fed, countries are getting fed up. We are a small country. We are a trading nation. We can't survive this kind of inflation. Alright? But the myth is, propagated by the mass media, there's no inflation. How can that be possible? Alright? Gas price has gone up. Food has gone up. But in this case, we cannot say no inflation. So given this financial scenario, one piece of the jigsaw puzzle, given the other scenario of the BRIC countries coming together financially, right, to prepare for the next tsunami, the other piece of jigsaw puzzle, total countries, being small countries, are now diversifying, forming new regional partnerships to try to preempt the crisis. Given all this background, the war party knows that the game is up. The end game is up. And if they can't explain to the American people the fraud that has been perpetrated by the Fed, that they've destroyed the US economy by money printing, they are not saving those expats, because the main economy in America has not been helped at all by the QEs. What you have now is asset inflation. Now, stock market, yes, it went record high, 7,000 on the Dow. So what? But the Dow went up to 7,000, all record high. It's not based on high volumes, but on low volumes. Manipulated. Central banks are buying up the share, hoping to entice normal ordinary people to put the money in the share market. It's a casino.
Yes.
Ordinary people are not benefiting from the asset inflation. How long can they go on? It's a bubble. Now, I'm not just saying it myself. To the American people out there listening to your show, I beg you, I implore you to listen to a very rational, very moderate, very honest former Congress rep, former presidential candidate, the Right Honorable Dr. Ron Paul. We can't say that Ron Paul doesn't know what he's saying. He's been at the forefront telling the truth to the American people during his campaign for presidency in the primaries. And he said that the Fed must be banned, must be audited, and QE must stop. We have to look after the Main Street, not the 0.1% of America. And he said that war will be coming. The war party needs a war to divert attention. Because if the game is up, and they can't give an excuse why, despite pumping trillions, the Fed has now has a balance sheet of 4 trillion. They're given credits and guarantees of over 17 trillion. With all this money being pumped into the economy, surely unemployment will be reduced tremendously. Yet we have almost 50 million people in America on food stamps. Unemployment is a fake, the figures. Once you have used up your entitlement of your unemployment benefits, you don't count as unemployed anymore, even though you're still unemployed. What would happen if the people wake up and realize that the Fed was lying, the president was lying, Congress was lying, and they were conned, their life, their wealth has been transferred out to the 0.1%, there'll be a revolution, there'll be social unrest. Hence, all the recent legislation in America, draconian legislation in preparation for the shutdown of the American people. That's why they need a war to divert attention. So that when there's a war,
of course,
the cry from the mass media will be, support your country, fly the flag, defend the nation. But these people themselves will destroy America. And there's another gentleman, immaculate intelligence, a track record of uprightness in government service, Paul Craig Roberts, a former assistant secretary in Treasury during the Reagan administration. He's been coming out with all sorts of data and figures to show that there is no recovery in America. Things will go worse. And he said repeatedly, the neocons are preparing for another war. Now, given this backdrop, we can now come back to what happening and what has happened in Ukraine at MH17. You will also recall, Nina, that few months ago in February, Victoria Nuland spoke on television saying that we have invested $5 billion in Ukraine to change the regime in Ukraine so that they could go into Ukraine. Why Ukraine? Again, oil, gas. Because Ukraine is the nation that transits, right?
Right.
Gas from Russia.
Yes, yes.
And the Central Asia to Europe. And guess what? These corrupt financial elites, most corrupt, is going to have a windfall. Why? 3 years ago, you recall, there was a war in Georgia. Remember? George's. No one talks about it, but the war was essentially a fight over the toll that was levied on the oil sold by Russia. Bush, Clinton, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton,
right.
Cheney, imposed on Georgia a cut for every barrel of oil that was exported. They levied a cut, a couple of US dollars per barrel. All right?
Uh-huh.
Likewise, they are imposing that levy for the gas and oil that's passing through Ukraine. Is there no coincidence that the son of Joe Biden, the vice president, before the shooting down of MH17 and before the civil war flashed to the present proportions in East Ukraine, Joe Biden's son was appointed as the director of the largest oil and gas company in Ukraine.
Whoa!
To control the flow of oil and gas and to allow them to levy a toll to put in their coffers, in their pockets. So IMF is coming now, NATO is coming now and say, look, if you want us to protect your regime, the new president, draw the line. We must have control of the oil and gas. We will levy a toll, an agreed toll, X dollars per barrel. And you do as we say. You will now go east and start a civil war. And that will give us a pretext to engage Russia. Now this seems so far-fetched, so beyond comprehension of the ordinary people. But the commander-in-chief of NATO, General, I don't have his full name, I think it's Britlov or Britlov, the commander of NATO, just 2 weeks ago said openly, Poland will be the front line in the war against Russia. They have deployed advanced fighters, fighter planes. They have deployed NATO forces in Poland as the staging post for the eventual war against Russia. They said that. The commander of NATO. So, how is it that the good people of America are kept totally in the dark because the mass media kept all this out from the American people? I'm sure if the American people were aware that the so-called civil war raging in Ukraine is a prelude to the war against Russia, they will rise up and say, no, we don't want to spend money on war, we want to spend money on the economy.
Right.
But they don't know nothing. Thank God, Ron Paul has started in his own way from his website, ringing the bell of alarm, telling Americans, wake up. So has Paul Craig Roberts. And I hope your radio channel will verify what I say. Don't accept what I say as truth. Please, your listeners, don't accept what I say as gospel truth. I'm just another messenger. And hopefully in time to come, what started as a trickle will be avalanche information. And that will overwhelm the war party. Check with your people, your congressmen, ask them questions and ask them, why are they not saying the same thing as Ron Paul? Why are they not saying the same thing as Paul Craig Roberts? Even some of the leading financial analysts are talking about war. And there's one gentleman, I hope you will look him up. His name is James Rickards, R-I-C-K-A-R-D-S, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote two books. The first book is called The Currency War. Right?
Okay.
And the second is called The Death of Money. Google it. He's the senior managing director at Tangent Capital Partners. Now, very interesting. Some time ago, he was consulted by the Pentagon to conduct and assist in the war games. These war games entitled Full-Scale Global Currency Warfare. Because people always envisage war as merely the hot war, armies fighting. But right now, another war has already started. Global financial war. And he calls it the currency war. And they war games in the Pentagon. And James Rickards, R-I-C-K-A-R-D-S, was one of the key architects of the war game. And he warned, the war is coming. More importantly, he said that the Fed is too arrogant and the Fed is destroying the US economy. Now, this is an insider. His background is a list of remarkable appointments. In 1981, he helped negotiate the release of the Iran hostage. You recall that? During the Reagan administration. Right? Thereafter, he was a general counsel for the long-term capital management, LTCM, that would crash. Alright? You recall that?
Right.
And that almost destroyed the world economic system. He was right in the eye of the storm. Okay? And then, he has been advising Treasury. He's been advising the top people in the top financial firms of America and global banks. So he's not an ordinary person. He is an insider. He is in the know. And he has warned that this is going to happen. And he says there will be a meltdown. Very serious meltdown. That's why in his second book, he says the death of money. Now, when he refers to the death of money, he's not talking about the death of money in general. He's talking about the death of the US dollar.
Right.
As a global reserve currency. And he said the war party, the 0.1%, will not go down lightly. They're going to fight to preserve that hold. They are not going to give up their power. Alright? They are not give up the petrol dollar system. They don't give two hoots of America.
Of course not.
He said that, Richard. He said that in his two books.
Wow.
And I'm very shocked that when I talk to my friends in America, I presume maybe because America is a huge country, not everyone reads Wall Street Journal or New York Times, because in California, I was told that many people don't even bother to read Wall Street Journal. They have their own state newspapers and county newspapers, whatever. So, to hear from a person called James Rickards and his track record, we had to wake up. We had to take stock of the present situation and prepare for ourselves. And he's openly stated that these financial scoundrels, fraudsters, have deliberately manipulated the gold market, depressed the prices. And he has recommended that Americans should, at least for the time being, protect themselves by, if they can afford it, diverting some of their wealth, at least 20%, into gold. Not paper gold, physical gold, gold coins or gold bullion. So with that background, from this enlightened financial maestro, then we see another facet to the crisis in Ukraine. Because as I said earlier, oil is denominated in US dollar. Recall again that China and Russia ended in the historical, never before, agreement. China's entered an agreement to buy oil and gas from Russia worth $400 billion, I repeat, in the next 10 years, will buy $400 billion worth of oil and gas. And that trade will not be denominated in US dollar, but in either ruble or yuan. That is the clarion call, as warned by James Rickards, that people all over the world is fed up with the shenanigans of the war party and the fascist elites. And recently, again, the governor of the Central Bank of France was so angry because, as you recall, America imposed a fine of, I think, $1.5 billion or more, or in fact, I think it's $15 billion, on a French bank, allegedly for contravening some US laws. And President Obama told the President of France, Hollande, that if France cancelled the shipment of two helicopter carriers built for Russia, pistol carriers that was built for Russia, if they cancelled the deal and not ship the aircraft carrier to Russia, Obama will reduce the fine. Now, instead of intimidating and corrupting the French government to choose between Obama or Russia, of course, France is not stupid. If they were to cancel the deal, it's a legal contract, France will lose all credibility. That they are not a country that can be trusted to fulfill the contracts. But more importantly, a lot of shipyards in France will have massive unemployment. Who's going to buy ships from France? If they can be blackmailed. So given this scenario, guess what? The governor, or rather the chairman of the French Central Bank, said that this will hasten the downfall of the US dollar. We countries will now diversify because we have been blackmailed. This is mind-boggling. France is an ally of the US. Germany is an ally of the US. So are other...
Oh, that's a little extra music here for us. Thank you. That was a musical interlude, right?
No. Just my mobile went off.
That's okay.
So what is happening now is everyone is now being blackmailed, toe the line by Obama or else sanctions, right? Trade barriers. What have you? What have you? So, if France are, to use the frank expression, pissed off by Obama and refuse to toe the line, what then? The sanctions are stupid against Russia. Because even American oil companies, Exxon, British company BP, are telling Obama, are you crazy? We have investments in Russia.
Exactly.
Oil and gas for our country's needs.
Yes. Of course. They're not... Yes.
So, they are saying to Obama, we're not going to cut our noses like our face. The next crisis will be an energy crisis. Right?
Yes.
We need to have collaborative partnerships with all countries. But this shows a desperation. This shows a desperation of the financial elites and the war party. They know the end game is up. They're not interested in the main street. They're only concerned with their own survival. And that's why I worry so much. Because it's not easy for the ordinary people to contemplate or visualize a global war scenario. Very difficult. Very difficult. But that is the truth. And truth is very difficult to be accepted. We live in a world of illusion. That's why in my book, I wrote, we are brainwashed for war and programmed to kill.
Right.
Despite the fact that we know Bush lied about September 11th. Bush lied about the war, WMD in Iran. Bush lied, Obama lied about Syria using chemical weapons. They lied again in the coup d'etat in Ukraine. They said it was the president's soldiers that shot the protesters in the Maidan Square. It turned out it was the coup leaders, the fascist leaders, that used snipers to kill ordinary people to topple a elected president. So despite all these lies, how is it that American people, the British people, people in different countries, just accept without any question the mass media allegation by MS-17? And now, to the horrors of all horrors, when the Ukraine resistance recovered the black box and gave to Malaysia, as Malaysia was entitled for the black box, horrors of all horrors, we were asked to hand over the black box to Netherlands and UK.
To whom?
To Netherlands and
UK. Okay, yeah, because they were, all right.
Now, UK, Richard, will have their own interests to protect, part of NATO. UK was in the forefront in the cover-up of MH370 disappearance. Inmarsat was giving all kinds of false data and was primarily responsible for wild goose chase in South India, Indian Ocean. And now, they had the black box for over 10 days. Why have they kept quiet? Why no release of the information? They said that the information could be downloaded within 24 hours on the receipt of the black box. Why have they kept quiet? I'm sorry to say that our leaders in Malaysia, for reasons best known to themselves, handed over the black box to Netherlands and UK, because we are told that they are more suitable to lead the investigation, as in the case of 370, mm-hmm. Australia took over the leadership. Alright? So, Malaysia was pressurized to hand over. And they were given assurance that UK and Netherlands will be very transparent. There will be international monitors. So my question is, right, we have also said many, many times, if and when we recover the black box, it will be opened and downloaded in front of international monitors and independent experts. So what's the difference? Right? We need to do the same thing. But
sure.
No, we cannot. We are Malaysia, we're a small country. You have to give to the big boys to do it. So,
That is the case with everything, with every situation, in every circumstance. They have pre-selected authority figures that must make all these decisions. It is just wrong on every level.
So it's very, very disappointing. And I think that there'll be more to come. But I think the view that when someone tells a lie, they will tell more lies to cover the first lie.
Sure.
And then you'll have to tell more lies to cover the second lie. And I'm sure in the course of this cover-up, there will be many mistakes, as has happened in the case of MH370. I've caught them lying so often. It's embarrassing. Alright? And now, they just don't know how to handle MH370. Alright? Likewise, it's my belief that in the case of MH17, there will be cover-ups. But I have faith in the goodness of humanity and in the independence and integrity of the alternative media, that they will come out and expose the cover-up and scam, and so as MH17 is concerned, right? Something unusual is happening, but I believe we will give them enough rope to hang themselves, because it's not so easy to cover up such a crash. And if you notice in the videos, and it's very, very disturbing, if you go on plane, you travel on any plane, everyone is fully clothed. Some may be wearing shorts or blouse, but everyone is fully clothed.
Of course, yes.
But on the crash site, there are photos up on YouTube video where there were naked people. Dead naked people.
Oh, that's very telling.
How can that happen?
Yeah.
I mean, even if you go to the toilet, you're not naked.
Right.
You may either let your dress down or your trousers down, your pants down, but your top will be on. There's no shower in a toilet, aircraft toilet.
Sure.
So how the hell are there naked bodies still on the crash site? Now, what is strange, which I'm not going to intend to speculate because I'm still waiting for evidence, was that the initial monitors or security personnel that went to the site initially discovered some bodies, naked bodies, that were already dead and decomposed. Alright?
Yes.
So if a body died in a crash, it would still be fresh.
Right. There would be blood, there would be, they would have clothes on, they would be, you know, a lot of blood around. And
yeah, so when I first saw the video of the dead bodies, naked bodies, I told myself something's not right. But right now, I'm not willing to speculate because as a lawyer, I'm afraid not to speculate. But I'm now putting this fact that some naked bodies on site in my back of the mind, so that if and when they cover up and come with all kind of funny theories, all right?
Uh-huh.
I will then shut them down, because that fact cannot be easily explained out. Like I said, common sense applies.
Right.
You can't be a scientist or expert in forensics. Like I said in my first question, everyone is dressed on a plane.
Right.
You don't wear a bikini on a plane. Right? You may wear a mini skirt or mini shorts or hot pants with tops, but there were adult males totally naked.
Somebody didn't plan this very well, or they just didn't think about these things. They just probably took them from some morgue somewhere or some facility and put them elsewhere. And of course, the war parties have been known to do this, to use other bodies and put them in other locations in order to film something to try to create a scenario that goes along with their story. And it usually has to do with, and of course we also know that the war party, as you call them, have always lied us into every single war that the American population has ever engaged in, or the American military has ever engaged in.
I mean, the other thing is, right, it could be part of, see, it could be, like I said, in a false flag operations, or it could be subplots.
Oh, sure, yeah.
It could be germ warfare, we don't know. But another aspect which I will now address and bring to light to your listeners is this. The timing of the attack, the shootout of MH17, coincided with the invasion of Gaza.
Exactly. Is that to take
all the headlines in every newspaper focus on MH17 and forgot about the invasion of Gaza? It became an inside pitch story, not headlines anymore. All right. So I always believe that in any false flag operation, some other organization, intelligence organization, will write piggyback on it,
yes,
for their own selfish interests.
Yes.
Because it could be coincidence, but the timing, why launch offensive on the very hour, the very day in which MH17 was shot down? Doesn't make sense.
Yes.
It doesn't make sense. That's why. And you piece this kind of information together, right? It's mind-boggling. But very few people have the time or the perseverance to dig and dig and dig and dig for information and then collate them into a plausible, right, comprehensible storyboard.
Exactly.
Right? So when someone presents such detailed storyboard, the first reaction is, he's a conspiracy theorist. Right? It can't be true. How can it happen? And I always tell them, okay, if you think it's such ridiculous theory or facts that you've been confronted with, now I have a perfect example to tell them truth is stranger than fiction.
Yes.
And I always tell them, okay, now if you think that what I say is rubbish, okay, go and watch the video of Christine Lagarde's speech to the National Press Club. Why would a person of her stature, of her expertise, of financial issues, of global agendas, go out of the way to explain numerology? Does it make sense to you?
No.
So I always tell them, right, look, if I say that, off the cuff, you say, Matthias, you're so full of bullshit. You're off your mind. Please relax. Come down to earth. But thank God we have the video. And I saved it. Right? So some people tried to get it, right? They couldn't. I saved it in my website. So now when I tell people, okay, don't believe Matthias Chang, don't believe my colleagues in America, what they are saying on the radio show, okay, now watch that video and ask yourself, what's happening? What was she trying to tell the world, or rather the elite who attended the speech?
Oh, yes, we have to figure that who her audience was. And what they might gain from what she was talking about, and what she was talking about was not understood by the majority of the people, but they understood what she was saying.
Yeah. Yes. And she kept on saying, right, you follow, 7-7, G7, emphasizing July.
Sure.
And then, further down, the peak of 17 comes into play. 1-7. So I hope, I mean, at the end of the day, at this stage of the game, I think our priority is not so much to convince Main Street, they will come later. What is required is enlightened leadership. The more people who have access or control, or like yourself, who runs an incredible radio show, and the other lady,
Joyce Riley?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I told her, please use your influence to convince your circle of friends, those who are now in the media. To me now, the priority is those who have the media, the means to communicate massively, like your show. You people should take the leading role, all right, to convince other media people, first and foremost, before we can convince those six packs in mainstream.
Of course.
Because we had to win the media war. We had to win, for want of a better expression, the propaganda war. We had to counter propaganda, their propaganda. All right? Attack, counter attack, attack, counter attack. Lie with facts, lie with truth. At the moment we can do that repeatedly, consistently, exposing the lies, then the next step of convincing Main Street will be that much easier. But right now, if you go to Main Street straight away, which I have done, tried to, I have done some experiments. I talked to doctors, engineers, lawyers, judges, and they look at me with glazed eyes, you know, like zombies, Matthias. We can't follow you. We don't know what you're talking about. It's too weird. It's too far out. For doctors were intelligent, engineers, lawyers, judges, who are wordsmiths, who read, but they cannot compute reality.
Exactly.
And this is the reality we have to face. As people who are concerned with these issues, who are in a position to communicate using our own media, we have to recognize that people are so, living in the world of their own little cocoon, they find it very difficult to get out of that comfort zone and face reality. I'll give you an example. My own partner in my own law firm, brilliant lawyer, he only cares about law, and after law, to the pub or to the bar to have his pint of beer, and thereafter horse riding. That's his world. Whenever there's a crisis or a forced operation, and I informed him, he would tell me, Matthias, please don't stress me out. I'm very happy in my little world, in my cocoon. I come to office, do my work, go to the bar, have my couple of beers or some whiskey shots, relax, go to the horse riding school, ride my horse, relax, have a good meal, and that's it. Now there are people like that because they're too afraid to face reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you accept something, when you are in a state of denial, you're quite comfortable, because if you do accept something that kind of takes you out of that comfort zone, then you have a responsibility to do something about it or to share it. And a lot of people just don't want that responsibility because it comes with a lot of sacrifices, and people just aren't willing to make that sacrifice.
Precisely. And that's why my book, Rivers of War, Program to Kill, I've shown that it's so easy for a handful of people, the power elites. You don't need an army of few million to control a country.
Oh, no.
You need a handful to control the levers of information.
Yes.
Brainwash them, and that's it.
Yep.
And everybody will react like herd following the Pied Piper. And this is reality.
Right.
And that's why it's so important, it's so difficult, so frustrating to be in this position, that knowing the truth and having to tell it, and yet that truth is rejected by well-meaning, intelligent people, is very frustrating. But we have to persevere. Because I believe ultimately truth will out.
I believe that also. I really believe that, even though it seems like the majority of the people are into herd mentality. They all believe in consensus thinking. People don't want to be the oddball out. They want to follow the crowd because it's, as I mentioned, it's comfortable. But when somebody starts going against the grain, going in a different direction, it's just too uncomfortable, and you're more likely to have people roll their eyes at you and shake their head, and not believe you. It's easier for them.
Yes, and I think that American people must realize that you have a great country. You have an incredible document called the U.S. Constitution. It's so important that the country be ruled according to the laws as embodied in the Constitution. That's the best safeguard against tyranny, best safeguard against dictatorship, best safeguard against abuse. Look at the way Obama, he's worse than Bush. He has even exercised the executive order to kill Americans, having classified them as terrorists. With no trial, no evidence, if someone labeled you as a terrorist, you can be liquidated by President Obama. Now, yet, I don't see any reaction by the mainstream to this horror show. But in the same breath, when there's a show on TV or any reference on radio to Hitler and the Holocaust, they scream murder. They react and says, no way are we going to have it. No way are we going to tolerate such a person. But yet in Obama, you have a person who openly says, right, I have the power to kill. I have a list. If you're on that list, I can kill you. That's it, period. No laws, no cause, nothing.
Right. Well, that they do that by executive order, and if they get away with it one time or two times or however many times, they find that it works. And this started right after World War II, when they literally changed the entire structure of the U.S. government and made kind of a fourth branch with bureaucracy, and you mentioned Diego Garcia, and a lot of the people that are targeted are actually flown there, and they're eliminated. The rendition flights for the CIA to Diego Garcia I know about it. And I'm sure that other people know about it also. And that base was set up in a very strategic area of the world in order to do a lot of the horrible things that the U.S. government has been doing.
Precisely. And despite the fact that we have historical precedents of government involved in false flag operations, involved in lying, for example, Operation Northwoods, right?
Yes.
I mean, these are clear-cut case, declassified documents, which in the present world of internet, any Americans or anyone in the world just have to enter the word Operation Northwoods, and even the actual document, the memo,
sure,
signed by the Joint Chiefs to President Kennedy, you can download the actual document.
But people don't know what they don't know. They don't know what to look for if they're so distracted. You mentioned television programs and, you know, Dancing with the Stars and the reality shows. But one of the biggest distractions in this country is sports. And that has been the case for at least 100 years. And it's militarized. Sports is very militarized. And, you know, they always have the pledge, well, I don't know what they have. I've never been to a sports event I've been to small ones, but they sing the Star Spangled Banner, and they do it. It's ridiculous because it's so militarized and so politicized, and that's where you find the most brainwashed people. I mean, I hate to say this, I don't want to insult the sports fans out there, but sports fans are very brainwashed, and you find people that that attend those games are, they're the ones that start waving the flag first, because they're already in that mode of following the leader, following their team. You know, it's a team sport. Oh yes, it's us against them, and we got to beat them, we got to whip them, we got to show them who's boss. And so that mentality took hold in America a long time ago.
Now, I would like to make a proposal for your consideration, and hopefully you will convey to other people, the colleagues in the alternative media in America. Because I was thinking along these lines for quite some time, we are all different parts of the world, doing our thing, working very hard to gather information, to then pass it over to other people. But in many ways, we have not been able to maximize our resources and to maximize our strength. And I believe strength comes through unity of purpose, unity of resources, and unity in implementation. Having said that, I sincerely seek your indulgence and those of your colleagues in US media, wherever we ought to organize a gathering of like-minded people like you and me, Joyce Riley, whoever is interested, to come to Malaysia to have a global gathering of like-minded people, so that we have a global platform, right, and a coordinated effort to spread this message. If you are willing to apply some of your time and effort, then I would, in my own little way, get sponsors, because we need money, yes, but it's just sponsors,
mm-hmm.
to sponsor your airfare from America, from Europe, from anywhere else in the world, to come to Malaysia. And we say we invite 10 people, right, each specializing a subject of his or her choosing, so that we can highlight those research, alright, and hold it as a conference or a forum in Malaysia, and thereafter the deliberations will be there, or the proceedings will be compiled either in an e-book, alright, to be sold by your radio show or other people's websites, so that money, right, can be generated for and in furtherance of your show or the agenda which we are pursuing. And I've done this before on some other occasions, not on this specific issue, but on financial crisis, and I've invited quite a few people over to Malaysia and to get sponsors. Of course, it takes time, but I think if, for example, we can get a good gathering of people like yourself, I think it would be fantastic. What do you think?
Well, I think that that a lot of conferences, well, some conferences, are designed to build consensus, but they're designed to build consensus around the wrong subject. And I think that that the topic that you suggest obviously is a very significant thing to be talking about. I think we do need to be unified, and there's like you mentioned, like I've been thinking about, there are so many topics. There seems to be so much diversification. I mean, there's people that are talking about all the chemtrails, and there are people that are talking about fracking, and people who are talking about all kinds of different things, because we are so under siege from so many areas, from so many different areas of interest, that people seem to have their own, they're riding their own little hobby horse. They've got this favorite little hobby horse, and they're going to run it into the ground. When we need to see the bigger picture, that all of these things that are occurring to the average person, the average world citizen, that everything is sponsored and perpetuated by the very same evil group. And so we need to you know, get off of our hobby horse and see it as a large attack coming from several different directions, but all aimed for the very same objective.
Yeah, I agree with you. So what I'm trying to say is this: how can we, each one of us, knowing that we are facing a huge problem, to overcome the propaganda?
Right.
Right? I'm not really interested in specific topics or subjects which are
sure.
the specialty of each individual.
Right.
But to establish the lowest common denominator, that is, the need to come together
right.
on a common platform, that we need to set out, all right, on a consistent, regular basis of certain information which will help mainstream overcome the propaganda. That we should impart our knowledge, right, how we can overcome the techniques of propaganda by the main
right.
media. So, like, if we have the tools, then you can progress.
Sure.
If we don't have the tools, we'll be lost. While you and I have some of the tools, many people don't have those tools.
Right.
So I'm saying we should gather a pro tem committee to say that, okay, what are the tools that are required? Because the subject matter can be so wide-ranging. Whether, like you said, fracking, chemtrail, whatever. But unless you have the tools that enable you to analyze and be objective, be rational, and allow you to pursue the research in a very systematic way, then we can be distracted. All right? And then we need to impart these tools, this technique to people.
Right.
So I'm saying that, like, if we come together, then we can expand our network. Say, for example, you have written books, right? All right? Now, for example, Malaysian audience need to know your books. All right?
Mm-hmm.
We can arrange for publishers to publish your books, be it e-book, whatever. So I'm saying, by having this kind of network, right, we empower each other, we strengthen our resources each other, because by ourselves, I've talked to so many people, they always come up with the finances.
Sure.
Point shaken. But we have a new way of funding called crowdfunding, right? Recently, there's a gentleman, my friend, George Galloway.
Oh, yes.
A British MP who wanted to finance a film about Blair, right? Prime Minister Blair.
Sure.
And he wanted to raise a mere £100,000 to finance a short film. And it's about 45 minutes film, right? To expose the war crimes of Blair.
Mm-hmm.
And use the technique of cloud funding. It means he just opened the whole world, right? Are you supportive for such a pursuit to expose Blair? And within a short period of time, he achieved more than £100,000.
Whoa!
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So while we have the medium, I'm saying we are not maximizing what we have.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you.
So we are now fighting with well-financed mainstream media, whereas all of us are individually, all right, having to use our own resources, our time, all right, to promote our own resources. Nothing wrong with that. But I think if there's a network and we combine our exposures and our network, then, for example, one day if Mr. A or Mr. B says, "Look, I have this thing. It needs to be exposed to a wider audience. How do we do it?" All right, we brainstorm, we come to some agreement, and we then put it to crowdfunding. You get the funding.
Did you say club funding?
Crowd.
Okay, because there's a lot of people who would like to participate and would like to do something, but they don't know what to do.
Yes.
But this is something that that I think that everyone can participate in.
So George Galloway he's a good friend. I've been to Malaysia a few times. I've invited him to Malaysia a few times. He's a good friend of mine. We went together to Palestine. And he said, why don't we give it a try? Crowdfunding. And he went on his blog, and he says, I'm doing this. I don't expect, to his listeners, right? I don't expect you to do very much, but the minimum, £1, 50 pence, is all you need to do for commitment.
Yes.
Then other people caught on, not only did they give £1 or 50 pence, they went on to get other people involved. So we are basically empowering people, give them an opportunity, and more importantly, a platform to participate.
Right.
All right. They are now listening to you. After listening, you think about it, and then you go on with your ordinary lives. They need to be shown that there is a
hope,
avenue, all right, for which they can participate at their own pace, in their own time, in a very constructive way,
mm-hmm.
At a level which they are willing to commit. Because all of us have different levels of commitment. All right.
Right.
So we allow them to come in at their own level, at their own time. So there are some people who are more enthusiastic. Fine. So, for example, right? We don't have the resources for publicity of any one book, but if we combine together to promote each other, your books can be promoted in Malaysia and elsewhere in Asia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, other people in America who share similar interests, similar purpose, they have their own message to convey. Fine, we help them convey the message without being distracted from the main focus, that we need to empower people with the tools to analyze, analytical tools to penetrate the fog of war, to penetrate the fog of propaganda.
Right. I mean, that's what they do. They unite, they have the finances, the resources, but they are a very small group of people who are leading each country, as you mentioned. But they do it because they are unified and because they work together.
Yeah.
Instead of working separately and feeling like you're not really really moving ahead.
I mean, we don't have to start very big. We can even start with, right? For example, I will do my level best to get sponsors to finance your trip to Malaysia. We start with 5 or 6 people to form the core team, right? It's not be a formally structured, right? Just, I'd rather have it very flexible, informal, on a very, a simple understanding that we're here together to have a common objective. There's no such thing as a leader or whatever. It's like a network, right?
Mm-hmm.
We come together, we share information, we share experiences, and we then spread that tools to give people. So it's not a formal structure as such. You know? There's no investment, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Our investment is our knowledge. Our capital is our knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to diversify that capital and share that capital with other people. So, I know we can do it by video conference, what have you. But it's very difficult unless you come together physically, all right?
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to then start something going, all right? And I think you can get at least easily five or six people to start with.
Wouldn't want to fly over on the same plane.
Yeah. Find any other plane other than
Right. Oh, goodness. Well, this has certainly been interesting information. I was particularly impressed by the fact that you had a tribunal. And there have been other tribunals. They had one in California that did the same thing, that they found these people guilty. But
the difference in my case is this. It was a full-fledged court trial.
Yes.
Wherein the victims, see, in other tribunals, is people can give a speech or give a paper, read out a paper.
Okay.
And then they agree that such a crime is committed. We are different. We actually brought witnesses to the court. That means, I was one time the head of the prosecuting team. I had to bring witness from Iraq, from Afghanistan, right, for Abu Ghraib, to testify to the judges of the tribunal. And the defense team was given every opportunity to cross-examine them. All right? So, if my evidence, our evidence, cannot stand up to scrutiny, we will have lost the case. They brought the only witness as well, expert witness, to say why it's not a war crime. It was a full-fledged court hearing with international press as observers to show that we are not biased, we are not a kangaroo court. And when the judgment was handed down, and the reasoning with the analysis of the evidence that was tendered, the cross-examination, none of the international press who were present at the tribunal ever accused the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal as being a kangaroo court, or that the judges were biased. Every minute detail evidence was scrutinized and fought over rigorously. It's very different. I attended the War Crimes Tribunal of Iraq in Istanbul, where my friends were involved, Lufa and all these people. They were basically having activists, right, going to the tribunal, read a paper of their views, presenting their views, and then a panel of so-called experts then give their conclusion why their views are correct. But there was no rigorous examination of witnesses. We brought the victims, of torture victims.
Now, did this tribunal receive a lot of publicity from other countries, or?
No, I mean, because it was so sensitive, we had difficulty in getting publicity. But global research,
and the website.
Cynthia McKinney, a former congresswoman, did quite a bit of publicity for us. And in Asia, there were publicity. But I don't know to what extent in America was the publicity given.
Right. Now, I've had Cynthia on my program before. And I really admire her and her courage and the things that she's done. She's a terrific person.
So, that was how we do things in Malaysia. We spent a lot of time. We didn't rush it, right? The War Crimes Commission took 3 years to analyze the evidence. Then they recommended an indictment to be issued. Then the War Crimes Tribunal set to deliberate. It was a two-stage process. Had the War Crimes Commission, after reviewing the witnesses who came to Malaysia to give the evidence, if they were of the view that it was insufficient to establish a prima facie case, they would not have been an indictment issued by the War Crimes Tribunal. So it was painstaking, lot of effort, I can tell you. It took, I mean, from the time of investigation to trial, it was close to 5 years.
Oh my gosh, okay.
That detail. Hard work.
Yeah.
It cost a lot of money.
Yes.
Which we raised through donations.
Wow.
And sponsorship.
And the guilty parties are aware that they have been indicted.
Yes.
Does that prevent them from traveling as they would otherwise do?
Blair will never come to Malaysia again. In the course of the trial, he was so arrogant, he came to Malaysia to say, stop it, you Malaysians, I'm not scared of your trial, I'm here, all right? What we did, we pursued him, we hounded him, and chased him out of the conference. And then subsequently, when the trial was concluded, all right, and he was convicted of war crimes, we sent the judgment to him personally via the British Embassy. And we warned him. His name is now on the register of war criminals of the war of the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal.
Wow.
And that if he ever set foot in Malaysia, we're going to arrest him.
And you did the same for to Bush?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We did it formally via the embassy.
Now, is there any other country that would agree or collaborate with you and also issue a warrant for their arrest if they set foot in that particular country? Are there other countries that have joined with you?
Not that we know of. Originally, Spain was one of the countries that issued indictments, right?
Uh-huh.
Blair, but the government caved in when America pressured the government to say that if you pursue, allow such indictments to issue in your country, there'll be trade sanctions or whatever. So they
See, they use those that sanction, the threat of sanctions, to do a lot of awful, awful things to a lot of people.
Yes, of course, and to countries. So, and I think on record, I think we are the only country right now that have convicted Bush and Blair by due process, because the judges on the tribunal were not academics or activists. They were qualified judges.
Okay.
The indictments of the Supreme Court of Malaysia, of the Court of Appeal, and leading jurists. And one of the lawyers that was advising in the first tribunal against Bush and Blair was Professor Francis Boyle.
Oh, yes. I've talked with him. He lives here in Illinois, I believe. Yes, he's. Huh.
So, I mean, it was quite an effort.
Sure. Now, Malaysia is part of the World Trade Organization and part of the World Health Organization?
Yes, we are.
Now, did either of those organizations put any pressure on this on the government?
Oh yes, because right now we have been coerced to sign the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Which is a very, very weird agreement because it empowers global corporations.
Right.
To override the sovereignty of a nation.
Right. Yeah. That's.
If you look at the clauses, it says that if a country enters into agreement, the TPP, if there is a dispute between a global corporation and a country, that will go to an arbitration.
Oh, gosh.
The arbitration will be staffed by lawyers selected by the founders of TPP.
Sure.
And if they get a ruling in their favor, they can enforce it and foreclose on the country.
Sure. You know what? We have run out of time, and we've got 45 seconds. I just wish to thank you for your wonderful presentation and for telling us your views and educating us to the things that happened. Oh, my gosh.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the wonderful time. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Well, I really enjoy talking with you also, and I love your books. I have three of them sitting right here on my desk.
Time flies so fast. Hopefully we will email each other again and follow up what we discussed.
Yes.
God bless you, and may you take care of yourself.
You
please.
Too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Good night. Good morning.
Bye-bye.